that I teared up and had to pull over and park. I did. I couldn't make it, you know. And got home, and I could hardly tell Irma about it. And finally, I bought the crazy thing and played it for her, and I cried again. But I think that the message of it is tremendous from the standpoint of the way a man ought to feel before God about his wife. And so I want to play it for you. That's good country western. In case you don't recognize it.
Another day is over. Hard work and play comes to an end. Evening shadows grow long and strong as the dawn of night begins. Supper's over. Prayers are said. The kids are tucked in. That's when gentle arms serve me love and peace of mind. It's man and wife time. I lay beside her and I realize I am such a lucky man. For I've got everything that life has to offer in my hands. And I'm happy deep within as I hold her in my hands. And she knows she's mine and only mine at man and wife time. God has given me an angel for my very own. And she's brought a bit to my life. She's built our home with love. She's taught our children right from wrong and loved me so completely as my wife. The years go by like hours and silver creeps into the night.
Sort of says it to me. And how long has it been, fellas, since you just told your wife you appreciated her? Listen, if you like it, say so. You know, you'd be surprised what it would mean to your wife if you just tell her, honey, that was a tremendous meal, I appreciate it. Or your apple pie is the most, you know. Or just to say to her, you know, living with you is not just simply life, but it's an experience. And I really appreciate it. Maybe you better wait on that one until you've laid the predicate. Yeah, thank you. But if you like it, you really need to say so. Because women need the approval of their husbands. And you see, they look to the husband for that approval. And that makes a difference what the rest of the world thinks. If the husband doesn't approve, it's a bad deal, as far as a woman is concerned. But you know, women are wired up another way, a little funny. I think their computer bank's strange in this respect. They really want men to take charge, but yet they'll fight you for control. And that's a funny deal, but it's true. Every once in a while, Irma tests me. I think she tests me subconsciously, you know, just to see if I'm the same guy she married. You know, she'll leap out of line, and I'll say, wait a minute. I blow the whistle on that. And you know, she'll hop back in line just as happy. You know, she's just as happy as she can be. But I think women are wired up that way to just test you. Just to make sure that that you're still the man that they thought you were. I saw a little sign the other day that I think ought to hang in every kitchen or breakfast room or dining room, wherever you eat, and it says this, wherever dad sits is the head of the table. I like that. Don't you like that? Huh? You know, that's a part of it. But a part of the taking charge, fellows, is kindness. In Ephesians 4:32, it says, be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you. And if you'll be tender and loving and kind, I guarantee you that gal will follow you any place you go. You couldn't run her off with a stick. Because women just respond to tenderness and kindness and love. Now let me give you the opposite of it. This sort of fits in the context of the 7 years of a married code. They were single and went walking, and her heart did skip a beat. As she stumbled on the sidewalk, he murmured, careful, sweet. Now the wedding bells have rung, and they walk the self-same street. When she stumbles on the sidewalk, he just yells, pick up your feet. Yeah. Well, let's see. Where are we? Oh, one other thing about girls, fellas. They need very badly to feel needed. And the need for you to share your life with them. In Galatians 6:2, it says, bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And women, in their emotional makeup, need a certain amount of drama in their life. Heard the story of a young pastor, who had a call from one of his parishioners telling him that she was going to commit suicide. Her husband had died a short time before, and boy, he was all shook up, and he called their family doctor, and the family doctor was an old fellow, and he came by and picked up the young pastor, and they were going to go out and talk to the lady. And the doctor said, now, son, don't panic. Said, she's not going to kill herself. Said, between the two of us, we'll get her leveled out. But he said, let me tell you what the problem is, the real problem is. He said her husband really loved her, but he didn't understand how to express his love. And they had a big farming operation, and whenever the price of beef cattle went down, he never told her. And whenever they had a failure of the crops of alfalfa or corn, he kept it from her. And he said, to tell you the truth, son, when the barn burned down, I don't think she'd have known it if she hadn't seen it. And so he kept everything from her. And then one day he died. And he said, now she is faced with all of these things which she is not able to cope with because he cheated her out of the privilege of being a part of his life. And the old doctor and the pastor went out and they got her calmed down. But fellas, you're not showing love to your wife if you don't share with them what's really going on in your life. Because women need to know. And if you do not fill the void, the emotional void that a woman needs from the standpoint of drama and involvement, she's going to find that someplace else. Now, it may take the form of hypochondria. She may get sick, you know, be sick all the time, which may be one of the manifestations of the fact that you've kept from her the sharing of a part of your life that you ought to. Or she may get involved in something else outside the home and get busily active there thinking that's what she wants, when really her need is that you simply share your life with her. Well, I think I'll quit on the girls and go to the fellows for a while now. How's that? What the men need. I'll get off you men's back and get on the girls' back. The first thing I'd say to you ladies regarding your husband is do not try to make him over. You do not marry a man to change him. You marry him to love him. Now, that's generally misunderstood. I think this poem puts it well. This is the way it generally happens. When a man asks a maid, and she says she'll be his, it's a man's fondest hope she'll stay just as she is. But the maid, ere she's married, has drafted a plan for complete alterations to make on her man. You know, she's got her blueprint. Now that we're married, I'll work him over. If there are things that you see in your husband that you do not like, I have a suggestion. Keep your mouth shut and pray. Do not tell him, neither tell your friends and neighbors. But just keep your counsel to yourself and pray. If God's plan is that man directs the home and family, and he's walking with God, do you not believe that God is able to get through to him the message that he needs to get through to him better than you are? Now, the same thing's true about the supportive role that you play. You know, if you think he's making some kind of a stupid mistake, I think you have the responsibility to visit with him about it. But if, after having had the conversation, he says, okay, honey, I understand what you're saying, but this is the way I think we ought to go, then let that be the end of the conversation. You know, stop there. And I appreciate that about my sweetheart. You know, being 8.5 years with the Navigators, someone said at our wedding reception, said to another friend, said, I always wondered what it'd be like when two generals married. They really did. Because, you know, she'd been training girls and had 13 of them living in apartments that she was working with. And, you know, she'd not only made decisions for herself, but for most of them. And so they wondered. And the friend to whom the remark was made said, well, that's an interesting thought. Said, I believe that Irma would have made a good general of the Army, but I believe Gene's a Marine Corps type. But with the exception of one mistake of head, wasn't of heart. You know, we haven't had any difficulty that way. And that's amazing. Because she's smart. She really is. And we'll discuss something. You know, we'll have a situation. I'll say, honey, what do you think? And, you know, we'll talk about it. We'll discuss it. But when I come to the point of saying, well, honey, I believe this is the way that God would have us to go, that's the end of the conversation. I never hear another word about it. That's the end. And boy, I appreciate that. I really do. And a lot of times her ideas are better than mine. If they are, man, I'll say, I believe you're right. You know, we'll go your way. But once the decision's made, that's the end of the conversation. No more bickering and no more fussing and no more talking about it. Just over. It's through. Finished. I'll tell you about the mistake of head and not of heart. We went on our honeymoon down to Mexico. Got down to Mexico City and we'd been there a day or two. And we were going to fly over to Cozumel, a little island off the coast of Yucatan Peninsula. And got ready to leave the hotel to go to the airport. And she said, honey, have you reconfirmed our flights? I said, yeah. She said, how are we going to get to the airport? I said, I've arranged for a taxi. And she said, who's going to take care of the luggage? I said, now, wait a minute. I said, you know, all these things you're asking me, I just want you to know one thing. You know, that's my responsibility. You don't have to worry about that anymore. And, you know, she heaved a sigh of relief that you could hear, and she set the bucket down. And she hadn't picked it up since. Sometimes I wish I'd get her to get a hold of the handle, you know. But boy, when she put it down, she put it down. What'd you say, Mom?
I was explaining what the bucket was.
Huh?
I was explaining what the bucket was.
Well, set the bucket down, you know. Yeah, that means you're through. Done and finished. Well, let's see. Where were we? Oh, yes. Girls, you need to play the supportive role to your husband. In Genesis, and I don't even know where it is. Somebody can probably tell me where it says, let's make a woman, you know, let's make a helpmeet for him. The root word from which that comes in the Hebrew does not mean a mat for him to walk over. What it actually means is something that puts a foundation under. That's what the real meaning is. It's a supportive thing. It's putting the foundation under. Where is it? Genesis what?
2:18.
Genesis 2:18. Thank you, Bob. It's putting a foundation under and supporting. And anything which has two heads is a monstrosity. It's a freak and ought to be in a sideshow. And that's true of a family. You see, a family is not a 50-50 deal. That's not the way you run a family. The family is a deal where the man before God is responsible. Just like in the army, there is only one commander-in-chief. And just like in a corporation, there is one president of that corporation. And in the family, there is one head of the family. And that's the man. And it's a sad house, beloved, where the hen crows louder than the rooster. That's a sad house. And you know, a woman can win her rights and lose her privileges. And it's not really a matter of who's superior. Because each is superior in the role that God has called them to play. A woman will beat a man at being a woman every time. You know, hands down. And a man will beat a woman at being a man every time. Hands down. It's because God made them that way. And one of the problems in playing the roles that God has called us to play is that we do not believe by faith that the role is correct. And the society we live in really militates against playing the correct role. Because girls here in this country have been raised to believe that what happens is that they're some kind of a little special, beautiful little princess, and that a knight on a white charger is to come by and gather her up and take her to a castle, and she's to have servants to do everything, and he's going to put her on a pedestal and tell her every day how beautiful she is and buy her pretty things. Now that's sort of the background of the way the thing is, you know. And so the thought of being submissive and the thought of playing a supportive role, it just doesn't fit into the mores of the society we're in. It's not the lifestyle. And to do that, a woman has got to believe God. In the 13th chapter of John, when Jesus was washing the disciples' feet, Peter didn't want to wash his feet. You know, he said, "Man, you know, not me." And Jesus said, "Well, if I don't wash your feet, you're not going to have any part of me." And then Peter said, "Well, you know, wash me all over. I'll take a bath." He said, no. He said, you're clean except your feet. But in verse 7, Jesus answered and said unto him, talking to Peter, "What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter." And that's a good verse, girls and guys, to hang on to from the standpoint of the role that God has called you to play. Believe by faith that you may not know what God is doing now, but you believe by faith that He knows what He's doing and that you will know hereafter. And it takes faith to play the role that God has called you to play. A husband and wife are a whole lot like a lock and key. One is not good without the other. Two keys no good. Two locks are no good. And the lock's no good without the key, and the key's no good without the lock. But a lock cannot play a key, and the key cannot play a lock. It takes a lock and a key working together to do what a lock and key is supposed to do. Same thing's true in a husband-wife relationship. It's like a lock and a key. Another thing, girls, men need to be encouraged. All day long, the men are out on the military and they're striving out there for promotion and to do the job, and there are people shooting at them. And in business, they're out there all day and the tigers are after them, you know, to get at them and take the money away from them and the family. Or they're in the education field and they're in the kind of a deal where it's either publish or perish, you know, and so they're out there fighting that thing all the time. And then when they come home at night, what a man needs is to have a nice quiet place where he can come and find some peace and rest and encouragement. And if instead he comes home and you continue to hammer away at him, you are beating out of him the very thing that makes him a man, that would make you love him, and it's foolishness. Proverbs 14:1 says, "A wise woman builds her house. The foolish one plucks it down with her hand." And if you nag at the old boy when he gets home at night, you are tearing down your house with your hands. He needs to be encouraged. And he needs for you to be interested in him, not simply what he can do for you. Normally, self-centeredness keeps women from being genuinely interested in their husbands. You know, men are deeply wounded by simple indifference. I had a man talk to me last night, and he said, "You know, I have tried to share with my wife what's happening in the lives of the men with whom I'm working ministry-wise, and she always felt that what I was trying to do was cram something down her throat, and we haven't been able to communicate." But he said, "You know, just recently," he said, "I led this old boy to Christ, and I'm working with him, and you know, she asked me, what's happening in John's life? What did John say? What is John doing?" And the old boy was thrilled to death. Just thrilled to death. You know, that his wife had taken an interest. Well, you know, she probably doesn't have the foggiest notion of what she's done. You know. But she has thrilled that old boy to death simply because she's interested in what he's interested in. Surprisingly enough, girls, it's very, very seldom sex that drives a man to a mistress. Did you know that? Very seldom. What it is generally is a woman who makes him feel like a man and a king. If we had the time, I could give you example after example here for a good long while of fellows who have left sharp, good-looking, intelligent dolls and married gals who would stop an 8-day clock. That's right. And who are gloriously happy. Boy, and I could tell you over and over and over again those cases, you know. And the reason he left that doll was because she wasn't fulfilling his need as a man. And here's some old gal, I think one in particular, an elevator operator. And this old boy was married, had two fine children, had his own business, was active in his church, was a leader in the community. And he left his wife and lost his business and had to move from the community and married an elevator operator. We don't have time. I could tell you the story, which is, but believe me, be interested in them, girls. And then men need to be prayed for with understanding and insight. Satan's out to get the man of God. That's one of his plans. And therefore, you need to pray defensively for your husband. Pray against pride. Pray against lust. I remember when Irma told my mother, and my mother is a very proper lady. Very proper. And Irma told her, she said, I'm praying against lust for Gene when he travels. And my mother was shocked. Her little boy. The thought had never occurred to her, you know. But Irma's wise enough to know that the devil is active. And so, boy, you know, when I'm off, she's praying defensively. And you need to pray about lust and about pride and about the love of money. And you know what his weaknesses are. And whatever they are, boy, pray defensively to God. Men need to be prayed for. And then men need a loving companion, girls, not a nagging, negative, critical dream buster. Not a woman who's filled with self-pity and complaining and resentment and bitterness. Man, he needs a loving companion. Now we've about run out of time. We'll move over that one. There are a couple, three problems I'd like to speak to for a minute that are pretty common. One of them is a problem of sex. Generally, men have more sex drive than women. Generally. And because of that, that can be a real problem. But fellas, a satisfactory sex relationship is a husband's do-it-yourself project. Only less than 10% of the women who are frigid physiologically. There's something physically wrong. 90% of them are frigid because some man is not smart enough to meet her needs. Do not be rude. Do not be crude. And do not be in a hurry. First Corinthians 7, verses 1 through 5. It says, "Now concerning the things whereof ye wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one the other, except it be with consent for a time, that ye may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency." Verse 5 is a key verse. Defraud ye not one another. When either marriage partner begins to use sex as a tool or a weapon to get what they want, to get their way, they need to recognize that they have just jumped outside the scope of holy writ and are walking in direct disobedience to the revealed will of God and His Word. Now that's a fact. Defraud ye not one the other. Another problem area is a matter of finances. You know, it's not how well I'd be doing if a million should fall my lot, but what am I thinking today about the dollar and a quarter I've got? That's the deal. What are you doing about the stewardship of what you now have? 1 Corinthians 4:2 says, "Moreover, in stewards it's required that a man be found faithful." And a lot of the problems in marriage are because of the selfishness of the husband as far as money is concerned. Now, fellows, women have needs that you don't have. And I found out that one of the real needs that a woman has is get her hair fixed. And you know, that bugs me. I'm sorry, I pray about it. But I don't mind the money, it's just the time involved. You know, but to go and spend 2 or 3 hours at a beauty shop, but that's, you know, I figured out women need that. And it may be that spending a little money allowing the wife to go to the beauty shop may save you a hospital bill on her. Because, you know, women need that. And frankly, I've never known a woman who left a man because they were poor, if he was fair when they had any money, or if she thought he'd be fair when they got any. That bugle means it's time, doesn't it? Okay. I thought I heard a bugle. I'm hearing things. You all pray for me. I'm hearing bugles. Let me say a word about children. Dr. Stuart A. Rosenberg, who recently wrote a book, The Road to Confidence, said that the cult of the child has reached such proportion in our country that in many ways our children are no longer children. They are willful dictators, pint-sized Caesars, and little Napoleons. Boy, that's about right. But we have a responsibility to teach discipline in our home. There's all kinds of books written on raising children, but the best one I have ever found is the book of Proverbs. Now, if you'll just go read it and do what he says to do, it'll work. Children must learn discipline. If they do not learn it in a home, they may have to learn it in school. If they do not learn it in school, they may learn it at the police station. If they do not learn it there, they may learn it in the army. Or ultimately, if they do not learn it there, they may learn it at the gas chamber or the hangman's noose or the electric chair. But children must learn discipline. And on this matter of role-playing, recently a group of 6 psychiatrists ran a 2-year study on homosexuality. They concluded that the cause of homosexuality was not a glandular problem or because somebody was slight in build, and it was not a heredity problem, that homosexuality was produced with children being in a home where the father did not play the leading role, where his word counted for nothing. That's where they came from. And whenever a kid does not have a male image to identify with, as he should, then you're really playing havoc with your kids. Because they'll come out wired up wrong emotionally and may end up in all kinds of problems. So you owe it to your kids to play the role that God intended to be played. Another problem is communication. One woman said, you've heard of the great stone face, I married it. He said his vocabulary consists of 2 words. And he only speaks to them as he holds his cup of coffee and a scene behind the newspaper. And the words are and you know. And women do need to be talked to, fellas. And they need to be clued in. Everything I write in my office, I have the secretary make an extra carbon. It costs me 1 sheet of onion skin paper. And every letter I write, I put that in my briefcase, that extra carbon. I take it home every night. And Irma sees it. Well, you know, that's a lot easier than me trying to explain to her what happened during the day. And also it says to her that I want you to know what's going on, honey. And boy, when I get home, she's anxious to know what's in the briefcase. You know? Well, she gets in the briefcase and, you know, she'll read them and then she's content to throw them away and all is well. But it's a part of keeping her clued in. Well, the way it ought to work is this way and then I'll quit. This is called before and after marriage. We used to talk of so many things, of roses and summer and golden rings, music and dances and books and plays, Venice and moonlight and future days. Now our chief subjects are food and bills. Genevieve's measles and Johnny's ills. New shoes for Betty and a hat for Jane. And taxes and insurance and the mail and rain. We used to say that romance would stay. We'd walk together a magic way. Though we don't talk as in days of yore. Strange is it not that I love you more. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the picture that you've given us of the Christian home and marriage. And I would pray, Lord, that each marriage represented in this room might be a marriage that you could use in your hand as a tool, as a witness to the unbelieving world of the reality of Jesus Christ. I thank you for the privilege of my beloved. In Jesus' name, amen.